Historia Canadiana is recorded on the unceded lands of the Kanien'kehá:ka First Nation. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Historia Canadiana, where we just sometimes break out into song and dance.
Woo! You can't see the dance part, but you can hear us.
So you can feel the voices. Dance part through the mic, I feel.
There you go.
So, my name is Patrick, and with me, as always, is my delightful and delicious co-host, Mackenzie. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you doing today?
I'm roasting, but it's okay.
Roasty toasty?
For those who don't
turn
know,
on the air conditioning?
I don't have the air conditioning.
Oh, boo.
I'm not that cool. But we have windows open on both our ends of the apartment to get through this last day of what is an abnormally hot May in Montreal. Right. Yep. But anyway, global warming is a myth and it doesn't matter.
It's
anyway,
okay. Everything is fine.
Everything is fine. This just reminds me how much life is increasingly like hell. So today, in order to cool us down a little bit, we're going to be talking about hockey. So Yay! Canada's other national sport. Our last episode was on lacrosse, and this time we kind of figured why not go to a similar purview, right? Talking a little bit about the origins, the significance of hockey within Canadian culture, within the Canadian mindset, and just kind of go through some of our general thoughts about the early days and formation of what hockey is, right? Mm-hmm. For those of you who might be interested, we're going to be specifically looking at one of the articles that I pulled up for the further resources by Stephen Mach. I think that's how you pronounce his name. I don't know. But called The Meaning of Hockey, which was published like 10 years ago in The Walrus. And it's a story. It's an article that I actually had to read for a recent class of mine. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was interesting, a bit contentious at times. I think we both have thoughts on it, on certain aspects, but I think it hits at some really interesting points and at least some different ideas about what hockey represents in Canada, right? Mm-hmm. As always, before we get started, we always like to thank the people who support the show, right? And, you know, we have a few patrons and we always encourage people to contribute as much as possible to the show, right?
Because, or, hey, help us do better.
Absolutely.
Help us be better.
Yep. And by the way, contributing can mean just sending a message. So we got one after our lacrosse episode, which we've already read out, but I'll read it out for the benefit of the public by Jim McKay, who basically tells us that he listened to our episode on lacrosse. And while he's not an Indigenous person, it is part of his job in the education department at Crawford Lake Conservation Area in Ontario to provide interpretations at a reconstructed longhouse village where they introduce that version of lacrosse. And he basically tells us that, you know, I really enjoyed your take on the history of the game and took away some reinforcement of things that I have previously learned. And he gives us a resource after, which if listeners want to hear more about, that's always great. It's called The Creator's Game, Lacrosse Identity and Indigenous Nationhood by Alan Downey, which was published a few years ago by UBC Press. So Thanks, Jim. If anyone else wants to send a message, that's dope. All right.
Oh,
classic question. What do you know about like the origins of hockey? Like what's your perception on how it started, where it began, that kind of thing?
I have limited knowledge of how like National Hockey League began. 20th century history of hockey, I know a bit.
Yeah, like the highlights probably.
Yeah, exactly. Highlights, some highlight players, that sort of stuff.
Yep.
And then before that, I can only take vague guesses, but like sure. Just looking at sports, I can kind of take a guess of what hockey is,
mm-hmm.
You know, like how these things come to be.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Like most sports, surprise, surprise, and this is true pretty much everywhere, start as amateur and then it gets popular enough that it becomes professional, highly monetized and, you know, just keeps growing in that sense, right? What's particularly interesting, I feel, with hockey is that unlike lacrosse, which started out as this game that had been played for ostensibly thousands of years before it became this highly popular thing within Canada and professionalized, right, as it is today.
Yep.
The rise of hockey is a relatively modern thing as we understand it today, and its popularity just soared, right? The time between its modernization and when it became professionalized is extremely small, like the timeline itself, which I find particularly interesting. Yeah, you look just, like you want to say something.
I don't know. It's just hockey. It's just the weird. It's just weird how. I think part of it is we don't have many sports in Canada, as I said in the lacrosse episode.
Yep.
We don't have much in Canada, just in general, of like we can claim as our own.
Sure.
So when it's found to be something that is ours, we can get very attached to it.
Yeah, except basketball for some reason. We don't seem particularly attached to that particular invention.
No.
Anyway. But yeah, it's interesting. Like, and are you, because I know you didn't know much about lacrosse itself. Like, is there a reason why you're more interested in hockey per se? Is it because your family, I guess, is more interested in it or anything?
Yeah, family's more interested in hockey. I used to do a little bit of hockey.
Mm-hmm.
And hockey's just, it's, lacrosse is a wonderful sport,
sure.
But it doesn't have the same international recognition as a sport that hockey does.
Yep.
Do you know things like the at the Winter Olympics, hockey is the highlight sport.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, it's the probably the biggest competition at the Winter Olympics, yep. Bar maybe some of the skiing and snowboarding stuff.
Sure. Yeah. Or yeah, some of the skating maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's only if there's hype built around it. There was always hype around the hockey.
Yeah.
Like even if none of the players have any individual dramas going on, there's always hype around the hockey,
mm-hmm.
and you know who the players are. You know who like the major contenders are going to be. It's going to be Canada, Russia, USA, and then maybe like some of the Nordic countries, that sort of stuff.
Yeah. I feel like part of the reason for that is because similar to lacrosse, like the actual sport of hockey, yes, now you have all kinds of specialized equipment for it. Like at its core, you don't need that much. Right?
Oh, God, I used to play all the time with just like you have your skates, your stick, and your puck.
But like as we're going to talk about, and as Stephen March talks about in his article, like even the early forms of hockey didn't even have skates, even though they were playing on ice. It was just a much slower version of the game, but they still played it anyway, right? And so it makes it so a lot more people can play and get involved in it. In that sense, it's similar to how soccer becomes or football, wherever you are in the world, becomes this very popular sport because everyone can at least understand the basics of it and get behind it in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
So as with lacrosse, hockey is a bit difficult to pinpoint an exact origin for, right? A, because there was little records kept of sports at the time before they became either big amateur leagues or professionalized, right? So we can't exactly say, okay, well, it started in Kingston or it started in Montreal. It's impossible.
Right.
As March says, I'm going to quote here, the only people who care about establishing the exact spot where hockey was invented are regional boosters or professional adjuncts of professional tourism departments, right? That say, okay, well, you know, come see the birthplace of hockey. And that's pretty much the only people who care. But otherwise, it seems to be a pretty national sport in the broadest sense of the term, where unlike the episode of poutine where we were talking about, where a lot of people find it contentious that it's claimed as a Canadian thing when it's a very Quebecois thing in many ways, hockey doesn't seem to follow that same trend, right? It seems to kind of have been adopted by everyone across the country for that reason of like a lack of origin.
Oh, that's true. Like people in Canada debate over which city is the hockey city and so on, or like, you know, each provincial and region will say, we'll talk about why hockey is they're the hockey place. But at the end of the day, there is no place that can claim hockey.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think a large part of that is also the natural roots to it. It wasn't rinks came, of course, and those were important. But originally, it's just ponds, lakes. Like you look for frozen bits of water.
Yep, absolutely. You're like, okay, great. Is there something that I can throw on that bit of water? Sometimes it's cow dung. Sometimes it's just a rock that we have. But whatever it is, I need a stick and something that can slide on that rock, on that ice.
And there then you go, hey, those two trees, that's one goal. Those two trees, that's another goal.
Exactly. And for the longest time, like that was pretty much it. And, you know, what we see is kind of interesting. And this is something that Marsh and others bring up is, you know, stick and ball games, while hockey is seemingly this quintessentially Canadian thing, and it's in its modern iteration, it undoubtedly began here. But, you know, stick and ball games have existed in Europe and North America, in Africa, like pretty much everywhere forever, right? Or as long as forever can be a thing, right? Mm-hmm. In Ireland, for example, you had hurley, which looks similar to lacrosse in many ways. Or you had shinty, I think that's from England. And a lot of these places obviously had massive immigrant populations to Canada, right? And especially to maritime ports and military garrisons. So some of the earlier places where you see written records of hockey is around these places, right? And say, okay, right. Well, you know, sometimes soldiers just wanted to have a good time and ignore the fact that it's cold as balls outside. So there we go. Now we'll play hockey at least and maybe warm up.
People can just... Yeah, take the time you warm yourself up with a nice game of hockey.
Yeah, absolutely.
Throw a couple of punches.
But that's the thing, and that's something that MASH brings up as well. It's like, but at the same time, there's evidence that Indigenous populations continued, for example, to play lacrosse during the winter, right? And basically that created an early version of hockey, right? Because when you think about it, it's pretty similar as a sport. Stick, throw. But instead of doing it in the air, right, on grass, you're doing it on the water, on frozen water. One of the sources, and this I've seen it at a number of places, that kind of points to a quote-unquote first written down example of what hockey is our good old pal Thomas Chandler Halliburton. who in one of his Sam Slick books in 1844 wrote Sam Slick was observing people in Halifax, and he wrote, "You boys let out racing, yelping, hollering, whooping like mad with pleasure, and playground and the game at bass in fields, or hurley on the long pond of the ice, or camping out a night at Chester Lakes to fish." And a lot of historians of hockey and just people interested in Canadiana in general point to hurley on the long pond of ice as one of the first indications of hockey, mm-hmm. right, as a thing. Although I have seen it debated that this was, it might be that Halliburton knew that a lot of his audience would have been immigrants, and he used the term hurley in this case because it would have been one that was familiar to the immigrant population, right, who right. came from Ireland and other places. But the term hockey, as we know it, is right, comes from probably hurley, or there's other people who believe it comes from the French word hoquet, which literally means a crook, a shepherd's crook. And it obviously refers to the shape of the stick, right, in this case. So so what was I going to say? Damn, I completely forgot where I was going with this, but it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. Because at the end of the day, hockey is a game.
Right. Okay.
Like, notice these quotes that we're letting out is mm-hmm. you boys.
Yep.
It's not talking about, and then that's all sports. You can say this about any sport. It's for the end of the day, sports are mostly for kids. Like, as in, like, we do the things that we do and organize. Like, it's our chance to have fun and let loose so we can be like a kid again.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It's like, it's not just for kids. It's to capture that spirit again of, mm-hmm. you know, of
getting joy. Together with your buddies who you haven't seen in a while, going out, playing mm-hmm. a couple games together, all that sort of stuff.
You know? Yeah, absolutely. Which I can totally understand. It's like, so obviously today it's much easier to stay indoors and just do nothing than it was in the 18th and 19th century when this game would have emerged. But mm-hmm. at the time, like when you think about it, okay, yeah, this is something that, hey, it passes the time in the long winters of Canada, right? And you can capture that. And, you know, I'm not someone who appreciates hockey in any way, shape or form.
No, I'm not a big hockey player.
No, but I still played as a kid. I still know yeah. how to skate. Right, because it's just something that you do. And even
I don't
if
skate
you,
anymore, but I used to.
Right, I'm a horrible skater, but it's the thing that, nevertheless, of saying, okay, well, you know, I see all my friends kind of going out and doing it, and I don't want to be left out, so might as well try it. And it's fun, right? It passes the time until you get cold, and then you go in and have a nice cup of hot cocoa. Mm-hmm. There's another interesting MASH quote that I'm going to bring up where he intrinsically relates to the game of hockey to the land, right? And he basically equates hockey with something that is uniquely North American, right? Which, quite obviously, surprising as it may seem, in Mali, they're not going to play hockey because why would you play that on, you know, sand? But he mentions something interesting. He says here, hockey's deepest roots are Aboriginal. The clearest evidence for First Nations origination of hockey is that the game was brought from Canada to countries of Northern Europe and not the other way around. The Europeans had hurley, they had ice, they had never had ice hockey until Canada brought it to them. Right. And I think this is an interesting way of saying it. It's like, regardless of its origins, it is something that seems rather uniquely Canadian that was then exported out, right? It seemed there's something in Canada in particular that brought out this particular brand of hockey.
There's just something about us that, like, makes us really love fucking hitting a puck with a stick there, bud.
Like, I could maybe see his point, but why do you think that would be, right? Like,
why?
Yeah.
God. I think it's partially because the wintertime sport, a lot of other people, the only, like, if you look historically at the winter, most people didn't really have things they would do in the winter because it's so cold.
Right.
You would have to be a nation of lunatics to go out in the middle of winter onto the goddamn ice, run out with your equipment and start playing a game. Like, you'd have to be a nation of fools.
Well, there you go.
And as, no, because we talked about this a little bit on Pop Canada when we were talking about the comedy episode.
Yeah.
Like, our relationship and the way we've built our identity off of the cold and the winter and everything has led us to having a sort of resilience to it.
Yep, that's and true.
In a similar way, like, when the, we'll get to it eventually, probably. I want to talk about it, but when, you know, a place like Russia starts doing hockey, they do well too, because they're like Canada insofar that they don't care about the cold, they don't care about the winter, because it's been built into their body.
Right. And that's where you see things like Finland as well.
Yeah, exactly. Having, yeah. Meanwhile, like, looking at the States, great hockey nation, but they don't have that same relationship with winter.
Yeah.
They don't have that same, they didn't have that same history of being like do or die almost with it, you know?
Absolutely. And just the entertainment factor of it as well, like, when you think about it, because you're right, obviously places like Marsh is talking about as having hockey like games before, right? The winters in Great Britain are not quite the same, right? They're not as intense. Also, they were a more established, or at least, yeah, like, their winters, they had like more things that they could get around and keep doing, right? Whereas life pretty much stopped in Canada, like, for a long time during winter.
Like, and you know what? That's also probably a big part of it. Nothing that's else, what I'm saying. Like, yeah, we don't have like the big businesses or whatever. We just had time to drink and play hockey. And you know what? Not much has changed.
Like, pretty much, yeah. And like, just the entertainment factor of saying, like, okay, well, there's not much going on in the winter season. When you think about it, like, a lot of, for example, even in our modern time, right, a lot of TV shows during the winter aren't necessarily there. They're on breaks, or, you know, we have, you know, sure, we don't feel like going out to see people as much because, you know, you don't want to go out in the cold, so you watch a hockey game, right? Or at the time, you would have listened to the radio and listened to it on CBC or whatever.
And like, now some people listen, like, I'll get into that story later.
Okay. But
the whole thing with like radio and television hockey back in the day, because of it used to be, if it was a really important game, people would listen to the radio more back in the day because there was a delay with TV.
Right. Okay. And
you'd want to be the most up to date as you could.
But yeah, that's pretty much it. And like, it brought this sense of community in many ways, right? Hockey Night in Canada obviously emerged for a reason. It's because it was an event in many ways.
And there's a pride with something that you make your own. And I think that's what made it grow so large in Canada, is because to this day, it is, we home grow our hockey players almost, you know, like,
even if they don't stay with Canadian teams. Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, and there's some, like, it's like, if anything, you know, even if you're your own person, as a person, if you have something that you have made, you take a certain pride in that.
Yeah, and absolutely.
You can then expand that into a national level. And again, Canada doesn't have a lot of things that we have made. You know, we have been joked on as the country that is like a combination of other countries' cultures.
Yeah.
But to have something like hockey, which is wholly Canadian in its culture, is something we will take a great deal of pride in.
Hey, now, we created the paint roller.
Oh no, like we have things in our creation, but it's like American blue jean.
Right.
It's stuff like that, you know? It's the thing that is us.
Right. Fair enough.
And you know, it's hard, and especially in Canada, because there's always the ongoing identity battle between Quebecois and Canadian, mm-hmm. right? But hockey, there's no battle between Quebec. It's hockey's hockey.
Yeah.
Hockey is hockey. Hockey is for everybody who lives in the North.
Absolutely. And yeah, but so it's kind of interesting is that, you know, while Halliburton and others would have noted it as having emerged in like the 1840s and something similar, the actual use of the modern equipment that we would know started emerging closer to the 1860s, right? So John Forbes in Halifax would actually create in 1865 what pretty much became the modern ice skate, or specifically the hockey skate, right? That's created specifically for added speed, right? Mm-hmm. The way it's shaped allows players to go at the speeds that they go at today, right? And you start to see at this time the, in a sense, the scientification, if you will, for lack of a better
word. Science of it?
Yeah, but like starting to be thought of, right? Saying like, okay, there's actually some techniques that we can start thinking about, right, when playing this. And obviously at this time, Canada would, hockey would still remain quite the amateur sport, right? It wouldn't be until the 20th century that it would become truly professionalized. But yeah.
The word amateur means to have passion.
Yes.
Exactly. And so I think all sports should start with an amateur league and an amateur level, because that means the people care about what they're doing.
Absolutely. No, 100%. And I think that passion is, or at least that early passion for it and wanting to, I think you're right in saying wanting to create something purely Canadian, especially obviously around the centennial, around Confederation, sorry, is one of the reasons why it would have spread so quickly from coast to coast, right? Because people came to it with like, okay, yeah, this is something that no matter where you are, like ice exists, whether you're in Halifax or you're in the Yukon or you're in BC, like even though our climates are slightly different, and obviously our cultures in many ways from one province to another are very different, like hockey is pretty much this like uniform thing that you can find. And I think you're right in saying that that amateur passion definitely comes, definitely reinforces that ability to do that.
Yeah.
Right?
And you want an amateur passion, because then you have lifelong players.
Mm.
And that's what keeps a sport. Like a professional league is fun and all, but it's not the thing that keeps a sport alive.
Yeah.
I think exactly. It's kept alive if all the more people that play it, the better.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
The more people that can participate.
Yep. Do you feel like that's still the case today? Like, obviously, hockey, as we were saying, has become like such an international sport. Do you feel like people are less interested in it today in Canada because there's such a diversity of sports? Or do you still think it's central to that?
I think it's still central. I think any reversing on hockey isn't going to come from other sports.
Right.
But just in a general misconception of the culture of the sport, because hockey is such a violent sport.
Okay.
Like hockey has probably the most intricate set of rules for violence within its program than any other sport, except maybe rugby.
Yes, but even then,
rugby, it's like you hit below like a certain point and you take them into the ground, anything else is bad. Hockey, there's rules for like, you punch a guy, if you punch him with his helmet, if his helmet comes off, if you take your gloves off, there's like, like times, lists, legal rules and all these other things of how like shoulder checking, et cetera, like.
Yeah. And this is today with the equipment. Imagine at the time where
it was just hands.
Like you had a stick and skates, right? You had no like pads or a helmet.
No, the skates are never allowed though. That's always been the golden rule. You never bring your skates into the violence.
Because that would be a bit hardcore.
But yeah, and I think that's because now it's led to this belief of a toxicity in Canada where it's making violent people or aggressive people.
Yeah.
Which really contrasts with the general image that a lot of people have of Canadians as like quiet, polite, well-to-do folks.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting.
I saw? There's always that post that's like, it's just promoting male toxicity or whatever, you know? Which hockey got called out on. And that was, a lot of people came to the defense of hockey from all sides of the aisle.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, if anything, people are letting out their aggression.
That's the thing, right? Is like, I know there's probably no correlation, but I saw this post a while back that's pointing to a similar direction of what you're saying. I think it was on Twitter or something like that, where it was like, the number of civil wars, formal civil wars in Canada dropped drastically after the invention of hockey. And I don't, and like the guy who was making the post is like, I don't think that's a coincidence.
Coincidence? I think not.
But I think you're absolutely right. And there's a similar sense with things like boxing or whatever, which, yes, there can be some toxic behavior in it, obviously.
Oh, 100%.
But I
think that's the only pushback that hockey would have gotten, because our generation in general is much, we have a different mentality about those things. Like, our sports is things like Quidditch.
Right. But like,
millennials and Zoomers play Quidditch and spike ball.
Right. But it's, yeah, I guess. But that's the thing is, like, and that's something that's interesting with, I think, one of the more interesting parts of the Stephen Marsh essay that we're kind of focusing on in this case, is he does bring forth this idea of violence. It's one of the central themes of his essay. Mm-hmm. And I think he's right in pointing it out and saying there's a whole section where he does an aside on the history of violence in hockey. And he's saying, you know, pretty much from the first time that there ever was a formally organized game with rules and referees, which happened, by the way, in 1875 in Montreal, it was organized by some McGill students, by J.G.A. Crichton. And specifically that one. So already from the get-go, as formalized thing, it was known for its rough play, right? So intrinsically, violence was already there. Yeah. Right. And he brings up an interesting point right after saying this, where he says the fact that nobody, not even Don Cherry, who at this point has been fired from Hockey Night in Canada, but at the time was still a central figure and someone who was actively promoting that classic kind of violent allure of hockey. He says the fact that nobody, not even Don Cherry, can distinguish between what violence is acceptable and what is unacceptable comes down to a question of spirit rather to any defined legal definition. And I think he's right in pointing that out, right? Despite the fact that, you know, what you're saying of there are rules and regulations that say, okay, yes, certain forms of hitting are acceptable. There's always that moment in a game where when you're watching it, you're like, okay, well, that was a bit too far.
Yeah.
Right.
That's a bit, but it's also, but at the same time, we also celebrate our bullies. How many hockey players have become like famous for being the goon? You know, Goody, or
absolutely,
or being like a bully. What was it? The Philly Flyers were bullies, and that's their whole team culture.
Right.
The Montreal Canadiens have their big bully players. The Boston Bruins.
Weren't the Bruins for a while known for absolutely. And like it or not, like I remember at the time, at least one of my father's friends, Serge, who lives.
You have to get the blood running real warm in that cold. That's why.
That's as good as an explanation as any. I'll buy that. But like, it was interesting because one of my father's friends lives in Quebec City. And at the time, in the 80s at this point, Quebec City had its own hockey team, right? Les Nordiques, they were called. Mm-hmm. Or as Montreal teams liked to call them, les Merdiques. It's a little pun there in French. But it was interesting because there was this famous all-out brawl that happened between a game between the Montreal Canadiens and the Nordiques. The Nelzik, and they were saying, you know, Serge, my father's friend, had a recording of it. And every once in a while, they would play it just to see this all-out brawl that literally people who were on the sidelines came onto the ice and started fighting one another. Like, it was just everyone. And it left like this graveyard of helmets and sticks everywhere, right? And there was something very fun about it, and people were getting really into it.
We love a good fight. We say we can talk as much as we want about the safety of players and all that, but at the end of the day, we love a good fight.
But that's what I think Stephen Marsh means when he says it's all about the spirit, is that in this sense, like, people got wrapped up into it, right? But a lot of the times, the violence that's seen in hockey is still part of the way we play the game, and it's still understood as being non-confrontational in a sense, or not in a malicious way, right? And it's when people start to feel that it's intended for genuine malice, that's when the spirit is broken, right? And I think that's what he's pointing to, and I would agree with him on that front, right?
Feel that.
So after that first like rough play hockey game was made, it was done in 1975, 1875, sorry. It took a few years before a formalized, organized team was created. Still in McGill, it was called the McGill University Hockey Club.
Let's go! University from Montreal.
There you go. Oh yeah, Montreal for a long time, even though it was a Canada-wide thing, Montreal dominated hockey, right? I don't know why.
Because we characterized hockey by a bunch of angry people hitting each other.
A bunch of angry intellectuals from McGill.
Yeah. They're real. Listen, the amount of times I've gotten into fights about Oxford commas, academics are definitely some of the, like, the most, they have aggression buried deep.
Exactly. We just let that aggression out on where to put a semicolon in a sentence.
Between two independent clauses.
They had the right idea. Basically, instead of arguing about commas, like you're saying, they just argued on the ice. Like, that was the real
thing. In the end, you couple that with the fact they're not just academics.
Yes.
They're Quebecois academics.
But that's the thing, is like, a lot of these, I think part of why
it's Montreal, a lot of French rage.
I mean, it could have probably actually, there's probably something to that, right? Because Quebec was and Montreal in particular, was a particularly bilingual thing. And you probably saw something similar to what we were talking about with the Montreal Shamrocks and lacrosse last time, is like, people started associating with their class or their ethnicity in many mm-hmm. ways, right? Or their cultural background. And that allowed hockey to become a way to express those antagonisms in a more formalized, or at least in a more colloquial setting, if you will.
Right.
So I entirely believe that. I know you said it kind of as a joke, but I think that would definitely make sense.
No, and I also think it's a case of, like, again, you know, the McGill academics elites, they have the time to practice.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And that's going to exist just in general in Montreal and in other, like, more bigger, like, cities that have more amenities, because the people there are going to be a bit more better off, so they have a bit of time on their hands to practice, to play, to train.
Yeah, absolutely. And probably also, people tend to forget this, because Toronto and Vancouver, for example, are such central cities now in Canada. But especially at this time, Montreal was most certainly the hub of the country, right?
It was our metropolis.
Yes, 100%. And if it weren't for the burning down of the Parliament building like 30 years before, probably it would be our capital for today, right? Yeah. And other factors as well, like separatism, but English, that's another issue.
And French, yeah, people.
But the idea, but that's the thing, is like, Montreal was such a metropolis, and, you know, it had such a large population and a diverse population that probably you just had a greater pool of people to choose from in terms of good players, right? And so that's probably also why they dominated for such a long time, was like, just sheer numbers of people to choose from. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and it's also with the advent of this McGill University Hockey Club, around this time, you also start to see the first set of rules being created.
Yeah, because you got to have a way to play the game.
Absolutely. But again, like, when you think about it, for like 50 years already at this point, people had pretty much figured it out, right? So probably these rules would have started to see, okay, well, you can't cross on this certain time, or how long is an actual game, that type of thing.
Offsides.
Right? Offsides would come a bit later.
I know.
Right.
But you get what I mean. Same.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, at this time, this is still, like you were saying, amateur. People aren't really paid yet.
No. But they're taking money, I'm sure.
That's the thing, is like, we'll get to
where
it.
There's games, there's betting. When there's betting, there's money changing hands.
Yeah, well, yes, that's for sure. But there was, I wrote it down somewhere. It's like, for a long time, because of the prevailing moral climate of the 19th century, that type of conservative Victorian mentality, playing for money was considered immoral, right? But like you're saying, a lot of people, especially as the game would become more and more professionalized, would just take some a bit kind of under the table, especially if they were a really good player. Yeah, like, you would just, okay, it'll just be off the books, but we'll still pay you, right? You just didn't talk about it. But we'll get to that a bit later. So in 1883, the first world championship, quote unquote world championship, was played. But even though it was considered a world championship, only teams from Eastern Canada played, according to an article in the Montreal Gazette. So,
love it.
It wasn't exactly worldly.
No.
Probably only a bunch of middle working class white guys were playing from Eastern Canada. That's pretty much where it ended. And the McGill team won that one. And the first actual national association, which was called the Amateur Hockey Association of Canada, was formed in 1886. And it had representatives from Quebec City, Montreal, Ottawa. So it's starting to get a bit more formalized by the 1880s. By 1890, you had groups that were formed in colleges, universities, militaries, military bases, athletic clubs. You had specifically provincial ones, the Ontario Hockey Association, that was formed in 1890. And then in 1893, you had the Grand Poobah show up, the Stanley Cup.
Hey-o, let's go.
So I knew that it
literally started riots.
Yes, it... I'm sure it has.
Vancouver.
Did it really?
Vancouver literally rioted when it lost the...
Oh my God, what?
The Stanley Cup. It was...
When was this?
Oh, 2010, 2012.
Oh my God, you're right. Now that you're thinking about that, and now that you're saying it, hold on. Stanley Cup. Yeah, there you go. Stanley Cup riot. You're right. 2011.
That's the one.
Yeah. Oh, of course. I love that the Wikipedia page was like, it's a public disturbance. And the first picture they show is like of a bonfire that's in the streets of downtown Vancouver.
Yep.
Quote unquote public disturbance. So that's what I was. So in 1893, right, I didn't realize that it was that early. I knew it was named after who at the time was the Governor General of Canada, Lord Stanley, but I didn't realize that he actually was involved in the creation of it, right? Because he was such a fan of the game, he commissioned the creation of a trophy, which now we know, right? And he donated it to the champion senior team of the country, right? That was, at first, it was just in 1893. He was like, I had this made. Let's get teams from all over and see what, see who's best, right?
Yeah.
And what's interesting is that despite the fact
that Montreal kicked ass.
They certainly did. But this was open to everyone, right? It wasn't a professional thing like it is today with the NHL. It's literally any team can join, or a senior team. Right? Mm-hmm. And people from the Yukon to Nova Scotia participated, which surprised me to know that someone from the Yukon had a team in 1893.
Oh, God, yes. They love their hockey up there because it's colder in winter there longer than it is anywhere else in the goddamn country.
So they play for longer. Yeah, okay, that makes sense. But I wasn't, that which makes sense, but I didn't know that already in 1893 they had, because back then I wouldn't have assumed that it would have been that... They would have gone past that kind of like survival idea and would have played hockey. I don't know, but cool. At the time, it wasn't known as the Stanley Cup playoffs as it is today. It was known as the Dominion Hockey Challenge Cup, which doesn't quite roll off the tongue, but you know, it is what it is. And yeah, it was played on March 22nd, 1893. And ultimately, before a crowd of 5,000 people, which definitely demonstrates the popularity of the game, the Montreal Amateur Athletic Association, or the Montreal AAA, as they were known, which is very funny when you're Canadian, AAA, they won. And what's cool at the time is that...
Montreal teams would continue to dominate.
Woo! Well, yes, 100% they would. But teams could challenge the champions at any point during the season. Right. This was not a yearly thing at first. It was like, okay, the Montreal AAA won. Let's give it a few weeks and let's try to challenge them in a championship bout again. Right? See what's up. But it's only in 1912 that would change. Right. And by then we'll see... like it would have been much more professionalized by then, but yeah, it's before that it was just something you could challenge someone for. But then by 1912, it became something at the end of the regular season. Right. So in the early years, like we were saying, Montreal would continue to dominate, but not just the Montreal AAAs who won in 1892, 1893, in 1901, 1902, but the Montreal Victorias would win, the Montreal Shamrocks, who were also a hockey team, not just a lacrosse team. They would win a few. The Montreal Wanderers would win quite a few. But also,
nothing to say. I'm pretty sure the Wanderers is like from the Westmount neighborhood.
Probably. Yeah. There's no, it's like that would make sense. But also, probably the Victorias as well. I wouldn't be surprised. But what's kind of funny is that Winnipeg also had a team called the Victorias. So, and they also won the cup for a few years. The Ottawa Silver Seven, the Kenora Thistles. I love these names, by the way. And then we get a familiar one. The Ottawa Senators won it in one of those early days. The Quebec Bulldogs, the Toronto Blue Shirts, and the Vancouver Millionaires would also win some of these.
What a name.
I know. Like, that's why I kind of didn't hesitate to list these off, because they're just so silly.
Like, I love it. I love a good silly name, though, because yeah. The names haven't changed.
Right. But it's like, what does Ottawa Silver Seven even mean?
Like, I don't know.
Is it like we're continuously, the seven people of our team are continuously in second place? We're always getting the silver medal?
I don't know.
We're just content with being silver second seven, place.
Silver dollars. I don't know.
Regardless, the Thistles, I guess, because they're thorny. I don't know. Like, whatever.
Thistle could have been the city flower.
Ah, yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. So, in that same year, actually.
We still have silly team names. Let's be real right now.
Oh, yeah.
The Winnipeg Jets. Las Vegas Golden Knights.
Isn't it the Kings?
That's LA.
Kings. Sorry. Yeah. Yeah. The Pittsburgh Penguins.
The Philadelphia Flyers. It's all about the alliteration. Let's be real.
Except Montreal Canadiens.
Like, literally, we're just choosing to represent all of Canada.
But no, so it's the Montreal Canadiens, to be fair.
I know.
Yeah, to be true. Fair. It's EN. It's a national thing. Whatever. But in 1893, so the same year that the Stanley Cup was created, it's also the year that the sport started to spread to America.
And everything got worse.
But that's when it truly started to claim its international standing.
Right.
Right. And that, I don't know if you call it worse, but that's certainly where the ascendancy towards professionalization came.
Right. Yeah. So everything got worse.
Okay.
There wasn't a bunch of passionate amateurs anymore.
Yeah. Okay. But I don't know. Like, do you feel like it ruined the game that much?
No.
Because like we were talking about before, it's not like it stopped a lot of kids from playing in their neighborhoods. Well, or that's anything just like that.
It, you know, and a lot of people point to America because the States have won all the Stanley Cups within recent memory. The only time that Canadians have gone to the finals was Montreal Canadiens in 2021.
Yeah.
And the Vancouver Canucks.
Sure.
In 2011. And, you know, so a lot of people point out America's the hockey country or whatever, but if you go to these countries, like, they don't have the big hockey populations that play.
That's true.
They don't have the same, like, drive that we do.
Mm.
If you look at some of the best, like, the top teams that have ever won the Stanley Cup, you're still going to have strong Canadians showing there.
That's true. Absolutely. And, like, the Montreal Canadiens have still won the most hockey
by a long shot as well.
Like, part of that is because they're the old, one of the only ones they still are standing
the oldest
the, yeah exactly like let's also, be real here, there were like six professional teams who were playing in the NHL at first, so it's like
Montreal, you know, Canadiens, Boston Bruins, Toronto Maple Leafs, I want to say New York Rangers,
no.
Blackhawks, and Detroit Red Wings. No,
like, that's the thing, is I think most of those teams didn't exist yet.
I'm talking about the original six, though, like the six oldest NHL teams.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what I'm saying. So, oh, yeah, okay, you're right. Sorry.
God
yeah,
damn right, I'm right. Get the fuck out.
Canadians, Bruins, Rangers, Blackhawks, Maple Leafs, and Red Wings. Yeah, okay. Sorry. I'm apologizing formally.
I grew up in a very strong hockey household. Don't call, like, I don't know much about hockey, but don't call bullshit on what I do know.
Hmm. Yeah, your dad likes hockey? Or, like, the entire family?
The entire family likes hockey.
Nice.
By proxy, I always know what's going on because they talk about hockey a lot and I ask questions because I'm bored.
Fair enough. Yeah. I watch the Stanley Cup games if the Canadians are part of it. That's pretty much the beginning and end of my interest in hockey.
There you go.
Okay, so that's the thing. So I want to spend the last part here, even though it's going to go a little bit outside of the purview of where we are in our timeline, but I do think it's important to kind of talk about how hockey started to get professionalized, and at least go over, like, how it became what it became today, right? So This will take us a little bit into the 20th century, but I think it segues nicely. So the first overtly professional league, which was called the International Professional Hockey League, was formed in 1904, and it had teams from Pittsburgh, Sault Ste. Marie in Ontario, Houghton, Calumet, and Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. Right? And even then, even though American teams were obviously there, they formed half of the teams. The best players were still Canadian, right? They were the ones that commanded the best salaries. They lived, they were able to go from one season to the next, and they obviously played for the highest bidder, right? It was still recognized that, you know, the people coming out from Canada, they were the shit, right? And there was an interesting fact. I don't think they mentioned it in the Stephen Mashup article, but the highest player at the time, right, was known as Fred Cyclone Taylor, right? Which I love that nickname, Cyclone.
Well, yo, hockey, you have some great nicknames. Like, mm-hmm. Our best player is just called the Great One.
Or Maurice the Rocket Richard.
Dunk on Maurice Richard.
No, I'm not dunking on him. Like, that's a dope nickname. Being called the Rocket.
Called him the Rocket.
What was his brother? The Little Rocket?
Something like that.
Yeah, whatever. But yeah, he was Fred Taylor was literally the highest paid athlete in North America. All sports included. And he would make at his peak $2,200 per season. With bonuses.
Which is a lot of money at the time.
In 1912? Yes. So I don't know how much that is. Hold on. 1912 CAD to 2022. Let's look it up real quick. But I know that what is particularly interesting is that at first, he seemed to be reticent to take that much money. Mm-hmm. Right? And it's only with quite a bit of pushing that he would come to accept this. Because again, it seems like despite the professionalization of it, a lot of these people still played just because it was fun, right? Just because they wanted to. Yeah. By the way, so the earliest I could find is 1915, but in Canada, $2,200 per season is roughly equivalent to $52,000 today, which, let's face it, a lot of hockey players make like millions per season.
Millions.
But like, hey, I'll take $52,000 per season just to play hockey. Hell yeah.
You're still like, making more than a lot of other people would say.
Obviously, right? It's much higher than the national salary of Canada or like national income. But anyway. So yeah. And then around this time, also in 1908, for example, you saw the Ontario Professional League, which was the first openly professional league in Canada, right? And that only lasted until 1911. So a lot of these professional leagues, yes, they're often quite local and they're important as a stepping stone towards professionalism, but they don't seem to last particularly long, right? Mm-hmm. They seem to just be there, and either they're still too local or they're not taking that step towards full professionalization like you see the National Hockey League being today, right? But they're just not lasting particularly long. And the one that's, I think, most important here is the Eastern Canada Amateur Hockey Association, which we mentioned before. And that turned professional in 1908 as well. It folded in 1909, but in 1910, it reemerged as the Canadian Hockey Association, right? And that's when the Stanley Cup really became professional as well, right? Because it became the cup for the people who are part of the Canadian Hockey Association, right? And so the Stanley Cup would be like, okay, that's it. And there was a rival association, which was the National Hockey Association. And that originally comprised of seven teams in Ontario and Quebec and was formed in 1909. And then it was reorganized in 1917 as the National Hockey League. And it incorporated the Canadian Hockey Association in many ways. Right. And so that's where the Stanley.
Those acronyms.
Right. Like it gets to be a mess.
Hell.
It gets to be a mess. But when for example, what was it? For the, I think this relates to the Montreal Canadiens logo, right? In many ways. Right. because I think that's where, because, you know, I don't know if you've ever noticed. Oh, okay, never mind. Never mind. I'm wrong. It comes from a different place, because, you know, in the C in the Montreal Canadiens logo, there's like a little H.
Yeah.
And I thought for a minute that's where it came from, was from the Canadian Hockey Association, but I was wrong. It comes from the Club de Hockey Canadien. It still stands for hockey, but but a lot of people, right, like,
the logo is such a funny logo.
It's a bit odd. Like, I'm not gonna lie. It's
such an enduring symbol.
Like, it's cool, but like, it's a bit wonky. Like, I'm not entirely on board with it. There was a few that I think were better. There was one that was just like CA, or there was one that was a maple leaf with CAC in it.
I love the simplicity.
Yeah, fair enough. I can get behind that. But yeah, that's kind of where I wanted to stop, was just at least mention that kind of rise from being a bunch of amateur leagues to small professional leagues, and that slowly merged together into the National Hockey League. But what I still feel interesting is that, despite, as you're saying, like, the ostensibly Americanization of, in many ways, of this very Canadian game, I don't think it's possible to say that Canada has been subsumed by that. I think there's a lot of ways in which Americanization has impacted Canadian culture in many ways, but I think this is one way in which there's still a kind of, I think, spirit holdout in many ways, to come back to the term
obviously, Stephen March. Even if you're looking at the professionalism of hockey and how much it's been commercialized and all that, it's been, like, that part of hockey has for sure been subsumed by the American beast of capitalism.
Sure.
And that's why American teams do so well, because it's been shifted much more to the money that you have.
Sure, sure.
But despite all of that, the best players are Canadian.
Yeah,
The winning teams go out and they find the best Canadian players.
Yep.
And if you look at a level, if you took a ratio of how many Canadians play hockey versus, like, Americans, Canada would still win out.
Yeah.
Like, the spirit of this sport, despite being, like, bought by the U.S., is still very strongly a Canadian thing.
I could be wrong with this, but even, like, in the All-Star games and stuff like that, aren't most of them often Canadian? And a lot of the players still Canadian?
All-Star games?
Yeah. Like, sometimes there are, like, all-star matches that...
Yeah. Well, take a look at the Olympics.
Yeah. That's exactly, like, and still...
how Canada stacks up.
Oh, yeah. Did they win most of the games, I think, in the Olympics, right?
Hold on. That'd be
2018? Sure.
Well, that'd be the... Hold on. Anyway.
No, the last Winter Olympics were in Tokyo, weren't they, last year?
Summer.
Oh, yeah, of course. I don't know. I don't watch the Olympics. but yeah, it's interesting to think about. And obviously, you see, as you were saying, from Eastern Europe, a lot of you see a rise in many ways of those types of players. But I still think, in many ways, Canada dominates the hockey field.
Yeah, and it's just. Obviously, other contenders have risen up in the meantime, but like, looking at the countries that have won and such, you know, Canada is still very much a strong presence, despite the fact that, you know, Russia is the other big contender.
Yeah.
But that's also because Canada gets really wonky with its rules about who's allowed to play and not play, because the National Hockey League doesn't like it when its Canadian players go out to play at the Olympics.
Really?
Because it's a league that's owned by an American people.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And then they're trying to help their American... Part of it is they're trying to help the American team by not having the best players be there.
Yeah.
The other part is if it interrupts their season or whatever, they get less viewers and therefore less money.
Fair enough.
Yeah. But the thing is, hockey is so strong in Canada that NHL players have threatened to quit over this ruling.
Really?
And they're like, no, like, we want, like, this is the greatest thing we can do. This is our pride. Like, this is how much we care.
Wow. I didn't know that.
And Canada still has the largest number of gold medals for hockey.
Okay. Did they win in the last ones?
No. So 2018, 2018, Russia won.
Oh, okay.
2014, Canada won. 2020, Canada won.
Okay. Okay.
And that's, so, and then we, 2002, we won a lot of the early ones, like 1920, 24, 28, 32, that sort of stuff.
For sure.
Real randomly, 36, Great Britain won.
What? Britain won at some point a hockey Olympic?
Yeah, but this is also not taking into account the women's table.
Oh, okay.
Where the woman's fucking dominating. 2002, 2006, 2010, 2014. Oh, yeah, the Winter Olympics 2022 already happened, I guess, in Beijing.
Oh, Beijing. That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah. Okay, so women's Canada won, and then in the men's it was Finland.
Those damn Finns.
We didn't even get into top four on the men's side.
Really? Wow.
Because again, the best players aren't allowed to go now.
Interesting.
But even when our best players weren't allowed to go in 2018, we got third.
Yeah.
Which just goes to show like the strength of the Canadian spirit, the strength of the Canadian player base.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like even if you like completely hamstring us, we'll still come knocking at the fucking door.
For sure. Yeah. I want to come back quickly because I know you had some criticisms of the Stephen Marsh essay, but I want to come back to a point that I think sums up in many ways, and I think it relates to some of the criticisms that you mentioned before before we started recording, is his emphasis on hockey as this metaphor for something bigger, right? He often uses it as a meaning for something else, right? Or
I don't disagree with that. It's more so if you read this article in this essay, he has a very large part of the metaphor is hockey as this metaphor for Canadians looking for the Aboriginal spirit, as he calls it, becoming part of nature.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's entirely true that Canadians have always wanted to be part of the Aboriginal spirit. Maybe they did in the 1800s. I'm not a scholar of that time, but I know at least in the current time, that isn't something that's really kid. Like if you look at the history of the Canadian relationships with the Aboriginal people.
But does he mean Aboriginal? Because the way I read it was, does he mean Aboriginal in the sense of something from here?
That's true.
Like, because I can see like your criticism of that from that perspective, saying like, I don't know how much, because I think history has proven that aspect wrong. If you're taking it at a literal stance of white Canadians wanting to be more like Indigenous populations, I think if anything, history has proven the contrary, that they want to distance themselves as much as possible from it. But I think the way I read it, at least, or the way I'm interpreting that, is as wanting to create something intrinsically from here. Right?
Right.
And I think that's where he comes in with, perhaps it could be a contentious use of the term, but I think it's at least an interesting one that deserves attention, is he calls Canada many times in the essay a Métis sport. Right. And I think his choice of words in this case is particularly deliberate. A, because the Métis are obviously a population, a First Nations population, or at least an Indigenous population of Canada. Right. But it has this double meaning, right, of a population that has both Indigenous heritage and white settler heritage. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think he's right in many ways to say that Canada has that background as well. And he's also adding the use of the term as something that is intrinsically Canadian in many ways, right? The Métis are a population that exist within Canada mostly. And so hockey is for him this thing that's also, while exported to other countries, an intrinsically Canadian mixed heritage thing. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's an interesting way to approach it.
Yeah, and as we've seen with this episode, Canada, like, it is very much a mixed heritage sport.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
again, like, it's a very great article, and you can tell that this is somebody who really cares about the sport. I just don't know if it was maybe communicated the best way. I think the importance of hockey as a metaphor, as a symbol, comes less from these bigger debates of violence versus skill and nature, and like as the reclaiming of the natural sphere and all that, and more just the importance of how it, the you can make those arguments, but I don't think that's the most important about hockey.
Right.
I think the real importance about hockey is the way it's united this country in so many times, in so many ways.
That's the way that
like it can shut down cities.
Yeah, it can shut down cities, but again, like, in a way, the metaphor keeps going, right? Because it can be so many things. Before we started recording, and obviously it's outside the purview of this episode in particular, but you brought up the 1972 Olympic game, right? Of Russia versus Canada.
Damn right I did. The 1972 Olympic, the 1972 Summit Series.
Summit Series,
played,
yes,
between the Soviet Union and Canada, which, like, basically evolved into a battle of communism versus democracy.
But the metaphor continues, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, in this case, Canada, like many things during the Cold War at that time, was a stand-in for you know, like you're saying,
something greater than itself,
something much bigger than itself, right? So I think that idea of the metaphorical sport continues to play.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I'm not saying I'm not saying that there is no metaphor. Yeah. I'm just saying I think he was looking at the wrong one if we want to highlight the most important metaphor.
Right, right. Yeah, because in the essay, for those who haven't read it, he takes that game in particular and portrays it as, instead of what it was, and for many people, like communism versus the West, right? Like the Western forms of capitalism. But he takes on speed, right? Because he compares, he
says the Russians had the skill and the speed, yeah. The Canadians had the violence.
Right.
And that's what, those were the concepts at battle in that play, which is
perhaps true. I don't know.
False, and it's true insofar that the Soviets had a different type of conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
And that series, while the Canadians won, it was a lot closer than a lot of people thought.
Yeah.
And so we started accepting, the motor hockey team started accepting European styles and forms of training.
Yes.
But it was really about, at the end of the day, the most important part of it was, again, this, it became bigger than itself. And so far it became a battle between communism and democracy.
Right.
And if, you know, the communist way of training could surpass and beat the capitalist way of training.
Yeah.
And everybody, like, they want to, Soviet Russia, you know, it's always this idea that they want to know if they're better. And that's what we wanted to know too.
Yeah.
Because there wasn't a big interaction,
sure,
between the players at the time. So the Soviets wanted to know if they could stand up to the greatest of the greats, the Canadians.
Yeah.
And the Canadians wanted to know what these mysterious Soviets were like.
Yeah.
And it became a whole thing.
Yeah, no, that's a good way to put it. And honestly, we could do a whole episode on the 72 game.
Like, oh my god, that 8-game series, that's a whole episode in and of itself.
Yeah, I'm super down to do that, by the way.
Like, and this is something people will still get emotional and like very passionate about.
Yeah,
we absolutely talked a little bit earlier about the radio versus television thing, and if like schools shut down, the country shut down to watch the final games if that were being played in Russia.
Yeah.
And I remember my parents talking to me about it, and they said, due to the delay when they were playing in Russia, due to the delay of the television, because it wouldn't be instantaneous because of the limits of technology at the time.
Sure.
You listened to the radio.
Yeah. Okay.
Because you wanted to be the most up to date you could on the game. You didn't even if you weren't seeing it. And it was like a whole thing of like, the players were scared that they wouldn't be able to leave country, and it was nuts. It was nuts. Yeah. Of cuckoo.
So there was one last thing
because I wanted. Because it's what we're good at, and we don't want to give that up to anybody.
Right. Absolutely. There's one last metaphor that I want to bring up that Mash talks about, and he says hockey became, and I think this is true even within the purview that we were talking about today, more like 19th, 20th. He says hockey became manageable, civilized, urbanized, brought within the walls. But that is Canada too, a country of wild boys and girls who need to be civilized. The wildness at the heart of the game disturbs us, but also refreshes us. Right? And obviously, I think he is deliberately playing on the use of the term civilized in this case. And I do think Marsh is very aware that that could be a contentious term, yeah. But I do think his metaphor in this case is rather apt in many ways and kind of underlies a lot of the discussion that we were having today.
For sure. Yeah, and I don't think any of his metaphors are exactly wrong. I just find it interesting that he chose to focus on these ones.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. They can be a bit bizarre. Yeah. Is there anything else that you wanted to add? Or
about hockey.
Finish on.
I mean, anybody who's listening to our show that isn't Canadian, watch a hockey game, and everything we're talking about will start to make sense.
Yeah,
like, sure. Watch a couple of hockey games. Watch some old ones.
Mm,
go out and find clips of the 1972 series. The final goal is scored by Paul Henderson.
Absolutely.
In the last minute of the series, winning them the series overall.
Yep.
And you will see what the fuck we're talking about when it comes to this. Is like, watch the, it was the 2014 2014 Olympics in, I believe it would have been Sochi at the time. Sure. The Canadian women's team, and this was crazy. So in hockey, you can take your goalie out of the net and put in another player. It gives you full offense, but you're basically no defense.
Yes. It's often used as like a last ditch effort.
Yeah, the Canadian women's team did this. I can't remember if it was the finals or the semifinals. I do not remember.
Okay.
But the puck, the whichever team they're facing, took a slap shot from far away. It got past the lines. It was going towards the net, like going. Mm-hmm. It was about to go in.
Sure.
It bounced off the goalpost.
Okay.
And like, holy shit, the way people lost their minds. Because no, but like the chance, the random fate
for sure.
of that one like, moment essentially like helped win the game. Because not only was it truly moralizing, it was demoralizing to the enemy team. It was as if Canada was protected by a divine force.
It's like all people started believing in whatever god they believed in, like 100 times.
You
do, though.
In that, in those moments, like you almost have this belief that this country is blessed in a certain way. Like it's a weird thing that happens, but that's what the women's team were saying.
Oh, for sure.
We are blessed to win this tournament.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I can totally buy that.
Like I'm not a religious man at all, but like people who have that kind of faith, and that's the kind of faith that a good sport can inspire in a nation.
Absolutely. Yeah.
The Maurice the Rocket Richard riots.
Yes.
That happened in Montreal because I think his status was being revoked or something.
Yeah,
wasn't
it because he was suspended?
Something like that.
Right.
You know, like you will not see a level of violence in Canada usually unless it's a government affiliated thing and they're trying to peacefully talk with First Nations peoples.
Yeah, sure.
Or if Canadians think they got jipped off of a hockey game.
Yeah. So by the way, and again, this would be a whole episode in and of itself, but Maurice Richard hit a linesman and the NHL president suspended him for the remainder of the 54-55 NHL season, including the playoffs. And yeah, it started riots.
People were not happy.
No, they were not.
And it's you know, it's a point of pride for people about Stanley Cup winning. Who has the most Stanley Cups? Which is Montreal Canadiens, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
But like, who has the best players? Where do the best players come from? Like, this is something people care about, even at the high school level, the primary school level.
Yeah.
Hockey as a sport has been expensive because of all the equipment, but there are so many programs in this country to get people on the ice. It almost becomes a non-factor.
That's true.
Because of how much like this nation has embraced and supported its sport.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah, just fun statistic for you. So Montreal Canadiens have won the most Stanley Cups.
Yes.
They have made 35 appearances. They've won 24 times and they've lost 10 times. And then the 1919 finals was canceled because of the Spanish flu epidemic.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Of course.
The next team to have the most appearances is 24 with the Detroit Red Wings. They've appeared 24 times.
Oh, I thought it was Toronto.
No, they're 21.
Ah, okay. Okay. They were close. Okay.
Yeah. So the Montreal Canadiens have won the Stanley Cup as many times as the next best team has appeared.
It's like, and I don't know if they'll ever win because there are so many teams now or anything like that. I don't know.
Well, there's so many American teams, and also there's just the fact the system has kind of been rigged towards the Americans. But that's a different conversation for a different day.
Yeah, like because of in part of what you're saying, like of them not wanting to them favoring
funding,
the hiring,
budgeting.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Although some of the best players, like still Sidney Crosby and all that, are still like major. But they go to American teams.
That's what I'm saying. The players are all Canadian.
Right.
The players are all Canadian, or they're Russian, or they come from somewhere in Europe.
But, yeah.
But the American teams win because they can buy the best players.
Yeah.
Tampa Bay, due to the laws that existed in Florida, were able to have the highest budget possible out of any team. Like, there was no cap.
Really? That sucks.
So they were able to buy the best team.
That sucks. I don't like that, but okay.
Yeah. So despite the fact that the Montreal Canadiens we don't even know how the fuck they did it. They got to the finals last year. It was almost a foregone conclusion because Tampa Bay had been able to buy their way to the top.
Yeah. Okay. Sucks. Yeah. I hate it.
Oh, yeah. I despise it. It's really funny because I guess the guy who owns the league right now or whatever, whenever he walks out into the ice, people boo him.
Really?
Because of the way he set it up, the way he set the game up.
Oh.
So he gets, and he's like, he has to smile and wave, but everybody's just like, boo, fuck you, boo.
You get absolutely no respect.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
No, like if you're acting like that, nor should you.
No.
Yeah. All right.
We have statues of hockey players in Canada.
That's true.
That's the people we choose to make that. If you go to Montreal, you visit the Bell Centre where the Montreal Canadiens play their games. Off to the side, there's a little area, and it has statues of what people have called the four greatest players from Montreal.
Mm.
And like, that's how much we care.
I didn't know that. Where is that exactly in Montreal?
It's the Bell Centre.
Oh, of course.
You know where the Bell Centre is? You go off to the side of the Bell Centre.
I know exactly.
Near the Windsor Station.
I remember seeing those statues and I forgot like for a minute. Yeah. Okay.
Well, because
yeah.
they moved them because the Bell Centre expanded for some reasons.
For reasons.
But they expanded, but then everybody said, where the fuck are you going to put the statues? You cannot get rid of them.
Yeah.
And like, people got really busy.
Those are statues that you shouldn't take down.
Yeah. It was because the bricks... Like, you could buy a brick.
Mm, okay.
And, like, you donated money, you got a brick in this little plaza of basically the Montreal Canadiens Hall of Fame.
Yeah, okay. Cool. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So, I think this was a really interesting conversation. I really enjoyed this. But as all good things, it comes
Take
to an end.
Take us away, Patrick.
I'm taking us away this time? All right. Yeah. So, as always, thank you, everyone, for listening. If you want to join our Patreon Hall of Fame, if you will, and you know, help support the show, you can do so for as little as $1 a month, or you can get access to extra episodes for $3 a month. Mm-hmm. Last time we mostly have just fun conversations about aspects of pop culture. It looks a lot more like these last two episodes that we have on the show. And yeah, we just shoot the shit about whatever aspect of pop culture Mac thinks of in that week.
Last time it was poutine.
Yeah. And
it was a bit of a poutine of a conversation.
It really was, but I think it's one of our best episodes because we just, I learned a whole lot more than I expected to learn about a greasy
French fries,
food,
cheese, and gravy.
About like the quintessential drunk food.
It is the quintessential drunk food. That shit is so good.
I know. Anyway, so you can support us through there. Obviously, you can check out our recommended reading pages. You can even do a one-time donation to the show through PayPal. All of these are optional. We're happy to keep the show free. These are conversations that we have regularly anyway, and we're happy to do it. It's a way to think about the country that we live in. And the culture that we're living in as well and participating in. And obviously, if you want to support us in non-material ways, you can rate the show on iTunes or on Spotify.
In a material world.
And we're material girls. And so obviously, it helps boost the show. It gets it to more people's ears. Share it with your friends. All that good stuff. Or don't. If you think they would hate it.
Do whatever you want, man. I'm not your dad.
Maybe you are. I don't know.
I'm not a father.
So, yeah, obviously, any questions, comments, concerns, you can reach out through Facebook, on Twitter, by email. All of that's in the description. You know how to find things on Google anyway, I'm sure. So,
you guys can all probably Google better than we can.
Yeah, probably. Without further ado, probably this is going to be the last episode before we take a little break because I'm going to not be in the country for a bit and access to poor information, to poor internet. I'm going to be in Africa for a bit. So, not exactly the greatest internet.
Fun.
I thought I told you I was going to Senegal.
No.
All right. Well, I'm going to Senegal. And I'm leaving in 2 weeks. So, unless we record. Okay. Before then, probably this will be our last episode before we come back.
Okay.
So we'll see. We'll figure out maybe something with the schedule. If not, thank you everyone for listening again, and we'll see you all next time on Historia Canadiana. Cheers, everyone.
Cheers.